Green Day played at the Giants Oracle Park in San Francisco, and their lead singer, Billy Joe Armstrong, said on stage, "We don't take bleep from people like bleeping John Fisher. I hate Las Vegas. It's the worst bleep hole in America."
Had they not been allowed to play here?
I think they have, haven't they?
That you would think at some
point. Did they play at Allegiant Stadium?
You'd think at some point Green Day has played in Las Vegas somewhere.
But they are from the Bay Area.
Right.
And he was going on a very long rant about how, like, we're from the Bay Area, we are the Bay Area and all this, and then threw in a shot at John Fisher, and then threw in a shot at Las Vegas.
At Las Vegas.
Too. So he's not exactly
thrilled. What's a shot at Las Vegas for? Just rip Fisher.
Come on. Listen, John Fisher's not moving to Vegas unless we give him $380 million.
That's true.
So, like, if you're from the Bay Area and you're losing the A's, yes, you're mad at John Fisher, but you should also be mad at Vegas as well. Like, we deserve some of that blame because we're giving him $380 million and sort of letting him do whatever he wants. Because do we have any plans yet? We got any actual concrete plans?
Seen those.
No? Okay. We got renderings. No, we got renderings. But actual plans, who knows if that's going to happen.
Billy Joe Armstrong, calm down about Las Vegas.
I'm fine with it. If I don't know if he's an A's fan, but if I lived in a city and my favorite team was leaving to go somewhere else, I'd hate that new city too. I'd call it a bleep hole. No doubt about it.
Next question.
Malik Willis beat the Tennessee Titans. Green Bay beat Tennessee 30-14. Jordan Love didn't play, which means Malik Willis started his second game. The Titans traded Malik Willis to the Packers after the preseason for a 7th-round pick. Willis yesterday threw for 202 yards. He ran for another 73. He scored 2 total touchdowns as the Packers won. Will Levis had 260 passing yards, but 2 more picks, and Will Levis has 8 turnovers on the season, including a pick 6 he threw yesterday. Ed, did the Titans trade their best quarterback for a 7th-round pick?
Well, hasn't Will Levis thrown a pick 6 in every game?
Has it been a pick 6 in every game? I know he had the hilarious one against the Bears.
I thought yesterday they said 3 straight games, the pick 6.
He's got 8 turnovers, so probably.
This is brutal. They might have traded their best quarterback for a 7th-round pick.
It's one of the funniest storylines of the entire season. The Titans were like, all right, we're going to go all in with Will Levis this year. This is our quarterback of the future. We don't need Malik Willis. We're going to trade him away for nothing, a 7th-round pick. And not only is Will Levis hilariously bad, just hilariously bad. Like, Bryce Young is, like, depressingly bad. Like, you feel bad for everything involved there. Will Levis is just funny bad. The guy's just got so many turnovers in some stupid ways. His coach,
his coach last week was hilarious in ripping him.
Not only is Will Levis that bad, but then in week 3, they get to play the Packers, who don't have their starting quarterback. And, oh, God, it's Malik Willis, and Malik Willis looks pretty competent against them. Oh, it's great. One of the funniest things that could possibly happen. Matt LaFleur, by the way, coach of the year.
Oh, for making this happen?
I've seen enough. I don't need to see any more. They're 2-0 with Malik Willis at quarterback. Malik Willis!
Well, they're not sticking with him when Jordan Love's ready.
They gave up a 7th-round pick for this guy like 4 days before the season started. And they're 2-0 with him at quarterback. The Raiders had a whole offseason and couldn't get a quarterback to be that effective. They had a whole offseason and couldn't figure this out. But Matt LaFleur is like, I got this, guys. Just give me somebody that can throw the ball a little bit.
Right before the season starts.
We'll win the games. No worries. No problem at all. So, Matt LaFleur, coach of the year.
Great question. Thank you.
Justin Herbert left the Chargers' loss yesterday in the 3rd quarter. The Chargers went on to lose that game 20-10 to the Steelers. First bit of news, by the way, Easton Stick, not the primary backup for the Chargers. It's now Taylor Heinicke, which is just devastating news. I don't know what they're doing. Give Easton Stick the game again. But the Chargers lose their quarterback. They ran for 3.1 yards per carry. They scored a total of 10 points in that game. That's about as bad of an offensive performance as you can have, including the injury there. Should Herbert have played yesterday?
It's almost like, should Max Crosby have played yesterday?
Like, Herbert was not 100%.
No.
And then, I don't know if he injured it further, like if it made it worse, but he couldn't finish the game. was limping around at one point. That feels like a you should have given the quarterback of the team the week off at least.
Right.
Because his health and production for the rest of the season is more important than this one single game against Pittsburgh.
It's a difference between if they win a game or lose a game.
Right.
They're not going to win a game with Taylor Heinicke.
What about Easton Stick? Because they still have him on the roster. They just didn't play him yesterday as the backup.
Well, I think they end their season here, so.
The Steelers are 3-0.
With Justin Fields.
Pittsburgh has allowed 10 points or less in every game. 20 points they scored yesterday was their season high.
Boy, they come here in a few weeks, don't they?
Yes.
Oh, man.
They're going to score 20?
I don't know. They probably won't give up more than 10.
Are the Raiders going to score 10?
Are the Raiders going to score 10? What's more likely?
Steelers score 20. Raiders defense is bad. What do you got, Danny?
What are the odds that Minshew's still the starter at that point?
What week is that?
I think it's 7 or 8.
Yeah, Cleveland, at Denver. Then I thought it was Pittsburgh.
Is that week 6?
He'll be the starter.
Minshew?
Here's the thing with Minshew. You're going to get some good games.
Yeah.
You're going to get some bad games, but you're going to get some good games. He's probably not going to have 3 straight horrific games from here on out.
Right.
He's probably going to next week be awesome. Right? Like, that's what Gardner Minshew is. We know this. He's inconsistent. He's going to put together some really good drives and some really good games or quarters like he did against Baltimore. And then there's going to be games where you're like, ooh, gross.
Yeah.
Why is that guy the quarterback? So he's probably not going to have 3 straight terrible games. But yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers lead their division at 3-0. What a great team. They can't score 21 in a game, but they're going to win the AFC North.
That's a great, great question.
Ed Lights FC won again. They beat Sacramento Republic 2-1 on Saturday.
We're watching history.
They're still in 5th place in the West, but they're only 2 points out of 2nd, because 2 through 6 or 7 is pretty bunched up there. They're 12 points ahead of the 9th place team. 8 make the playoffs.
They're making the playoffs.
They're basically in. They're not going to blow that the rest of the year. They might be able to lose every game and still not blow that the rest of the year. But Lights FC are in a playoff spot. They're probably going to the playoffs for the first time in team history. And they still have a shot to get in the top 4, where they would host a playoff game, not just be in the playoffs.
A lot of differences at the top.
Matt LaFleur, coach of the year in the NFL. Jose Bautista, owner of the year. I don't know if that's a real award.
Executive of the year.
But owner of the year. Is he an executive? Owner of the year.
All right. I mean, they're going to go to the playoffs for the first time in history. It's a good call.
Speaking of owners, did you guys see Arthur Blank induct himself into the Falcons
Ring of Honor?
And because of that, they did specials at the concession stand. They were doing like food specials and everything to
like
celebrate.
Good deals?
Yeah.
Oh.
To celebrate Arthur Blank.
Wait. Correct me if I'm wrong. Aren't the Falcons, isn't Mercedes-Benz Stadium kind of popular for already having good deals? Don't they have
that prices? That was, when they opened, that was the whole deal.
Right.
Come and look at our concessions and the amount of money you have to spend.
Yeah.
And the low amount of money you have to spend for food.
So they had deals even better than what they normally did.
Yeah, it had something to do with like hot dogs and chips or something. It was, I don't know if it was like buy one, get one, or if it was like half price everything or what.
Well, good for Arthur Blank. Maybe he should be in the Ring of Honor.
Maybe next time win the game.
Calm down. It's the Falcons.
Next question.
Danny, the Nationals demoted their best player because he went to a casino.
It happens, man. It happens.
The Nationals sent C.J. Abrams to the minors on Sunday. Apparently, C.J. Abrams stayed out all night at a casino in Chicago prior to their day game on Saturday. Abrams played. I'm guessing they didn't know when they wrote the lineup out. He went 0-for-3 that day with a walk. He got sent down the next day. He will lose about $30,000 in pay due to this demotion. Abrams is still, he has not gotten through the 6 years before he hit free agency. So he's still on the basically Major League Baseball mandated salary there. But that's the punishment for when your best player goes to a casino, even though the season is over.
Listen, I don't blame him one bit at all. You're on the road. You're just hanging out. You want to do something. Your team is not making the playoffs. Season's over in a week. Go on.
Gamble. Have you seen, because I haven't seen it. Have you seen, like, what does all night mean?
Well, somebody posted a picture. I don't know how real or accurate or, like, when it was taken, but somebody posted a picture of him at a table in the casino.
What time?
I don't know, but he looked pretty tired. So it's got to be like super early in the morning because they played a game the day before.
But like, did he stay at this casino until
like 6 a.m.?
Well, I was going to say, did he stay like until 4 a.m. and then went back to the hotel, slept for 2 hours, got up and went to the ballpark? Or was he there until like 9 a.m. and then it was like, I got to be at the ballpark.
And he went
in
right to the
minutes.
Ballpark.
Went straight from the casino to Wrigley.
If I'm not mistaken, I saw a report saying he was out until like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning at the casino.
Good work by CJ Abrams.
And it's like, I mean, you're a week from vacation. Why not?
Wait a week.
Yeah, but what do you got to play for?
Wait a week. It's batting average. You got to get that up, Danny. Come on.
Nah.
He's playing for money.
That's all right.
When he goes to arbitration, they're gonna be like, your batting average went down that day in Wrigley. Losing some money out here. It's a very funny story.
I don't blame him at all.
Also,
he just needs to do it in D.C. too, because there's an MGM property in D.C.
Ed, if you are the Nationals, whether it's the owner, the GM, whoever wants to make this decision, are you demoting the kid or just suspending him straight up? Because it's a very petty. That's a petty punishment.
Absolutely.
To demote him and make him lose that kind of money, I don't know.
Well, you could suspend. He could lose the money.
Suspend him and lose the money.
But this way, he has to go to West Palm Beach,
right,
for the last week or whatever.
Yeah, he's going to hang out in Florida.
Yeah, I probably suspend him.
It's very petty to be like go to West Palm
Beach. Demote him.
Get out of here. I think it's funny. I think it's a very funny punishment.
At that point, just bench him. Make him a healthy scratch. Have him sit on the bench and watch. He can't play. So,
I kind of like sending him to the minors. I think it's kind of funny.
Next question.
The Indiana Fever were blown out in their first game of the playoffs. Connecticut beat Indiana 93-69. It was only an 8-point game at halftime. Connecticut really put that away in the third and fourth quarters. Caitlin Clark's postseason debut, 11 points. She shot just 4 of 17 from the floor, 2 of 13 from 3. She did have 8 assists, but Marina Mabry came off the bench for Connecticut and scored 27 points. She made 5 of 12 from 3. Connecticut's up 1-0. They play game 2 on Wednesday. Connecticut wins. Connecticut advances. If Indiana pulls off a win, though, they will get
back
game 3.
Indiana.
Game or series deciding game 3
in Indiana.
Indiana. So we'll see if the Fever can do that. Indiana has lost 3 games at Connecticut this year, and I believe the closest any of those scores have been was 19 points.
Oh, I'm not counting on them going home to play game 3 then.
Yeah. Now, granted, most of those were the early part of the season when the Fever schedule was
brutal.
Here's every game and every day, but they still, I don't think they've gone to Connecticut and even played a competitive game yet this season. So Connecticut was pretty good this year. Indiana finished the season hot, but their offense was a disaster yesterday against Connecticut. So we'll see what happens with Indiana. But Caitlin Clark's postseason run is 1 game away from being over. Coming up next, we'll get into some college football.
Live from the Findlay Toyota ESPN Las Vegas studios, this is the Press Box with Graney and Bischoff on ESPN Las Vegas.
I want to read a couple of things from the text line. 702-364-1100, by the way. First off, Matt says, Husker OT nightmare is even worse. Not only have they not scored a point, they have not recorded a single first down. It's been pretty brutal being a Husker fan for the past decade. So 7 straight overtimes without a point
without a
or
first
a first down.
Oh, my God. They might as well just end the game if Nebraska goes to overtime.
Hey, their defense could get a pick 6.
It hasn't happened in over a decade.
Give them another 7, Danny. They'll probably get a pick 6 before a first down.
Another 7 games or 7 years?
Both.
I guess how can you play an entire game and well enough to get to overtime?
Right. And then
in
just,
the 20s or whatever, just, you know, how many points you're at at that instant and not even get a first down.
Oof.
It's staggering. 7 straight games?
Yes. 7 straight overtime
periods.
That's
absolutely amazing.
With no first downs.
That's one of the best stats we've had.
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible. I just wish somehow they all happened like in one season. You just go to overtime 7 times in one season.
And don't get a first down. Never get a first down. Never score.
Oof.
It's great. And they have a good quarterback now. Like when we've made fun of Nebraska in the past, it's been because like somehow their quarterback turns it over 100 times.
Well, didn't the Martinez kid play for 9 years?
Yeah. But now, like, their quarterback's pretty good, and somehow they still had 3rd and 100 from their own 20-yard line. It's great. It's a hilarious stat. Also, John, I believe John was talking about Green Day.
Yes.
John said, I have seen them in Las Vegas. He has always been an ass.
Yeah. The lead singer.
I don't know. He thinks Las Vegas is a bleep hole, so who knows? Also, John says Malik Willis wouldn't do better at Tennessee. The Titans' right tackle allowed a bunch of sacks. That might be true because the Titans are not very good at football, but it is still funny to trade him away for a seventh-round pick.
And then lose to him that way.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It's pretty phenomenal. Now, I want to talk to you about an Adam Hill column that I unfortunately agree with. I don't like agreeing with Adam Hill. But Adam wrote a story in the RJ and basically suggested that Las Vegas as a city should refuse to host any Pac-12 events unless they add UNLV to,
right,
the,
to,
Pac-12.
The, to the Pac-12.
So prior to the Pac-12 basically dissolving, the Pac-12 put their conference football championship game here at Allegiant Stadium. They had their conference basketball tournaments here for
a while.
At T-Mobile Arena, right? Their two marquee sort of neutral site events. They had them in Las Vegas before everybody left that conference. Should Las Vegas as a community do that?
I mean, I'm with you. I agree with Adam. And I think it'd be funny.
It would be quite funny to say
we are not inviting
the
Pac-12 back. You cannot have your football championship game here. You cannot have your basketball tournament game here. We will replace those with others because others want to come to Vegas too. You could definitely get another championship football game here if you wanted to. I guarantee you that.
Well, the Big Ten's going to play. They're not every year. They're rotating, but they're going to put their conference basketball tournament here.
Right.
The Big Ten, I guess they have four West Coast members now, but the Big Ten, everybody's in the damn Midwest.
Right.
They're like,
they're coming here. We'll go to Las Vegas.
Every 4 or 5 years, let's go to T-Mobile Arena and play it there. Okay, so there's a couple of things. First off, if the Pac-12 like really doesn't want UNLV, for whatever reason, they're just like, we don't want them, I don't think this changes their mind.
If, in fact, they were shut out.
Right. If they're, so far from what the Pac-12 has done, they've kind of told us we don't want UNLV that badly. But if the Pac-12 is like, you know, we want Memphis and Tulane, and if they get them, whatever. If I'm the Pac-12, I'm not adding UNLV just for the sake of playing games at T-Mobile Arena or Allegiant Stadium. I'll just go to Los Angeles. I'll just go to a different city and play these games. You don't have to be in Las Vegas if you are the Pac-12. So I don't think this would work at the end of the day.
In terms of them being so taken aback that they would add UNLV.
Yeah, I don't think so. Now, if they want UNLV already, or at least a little bit, then yeah, they might say, okay, come on.
Right.
We'll bring you. But if they truly just, if they don't want UNLV, then I don't think this matters. I just think you find another city. There are other cities that have basketball arenas. There are other cities with football stadiums to play these games. You don't have to be in Las Vegas. So I don't know that would help. Also, I don't think the Raiders care about UNLV enough to do this.
Well,
if the Raiders think they're going to make money on a Pac-12 football game at Allegiant Stadium.
What was one of the reasons, and I know we've written about this at the RJ, one of the reasons that was floated out there among many was that the Pac-12 didn't like the lack of power that UNLV has at that stadium.
They have to
and
get
they
their,
don't have much power the, at that stadium.
They have to get their schedule approved by the stadium authority, which is effectively meaning by the Raiders. It has to be the Raiders effectively have to sign off on UNLV's schedule every single year, right? They do not have the authority. Remember, there's a clause in their lease agreement. I don't know if it'll ever come into play. I don't know if they'll ever enforce it. But there's a clause in UNLV's lease agreement that any game they play has to be over at midnight on Saturday.
Yeah, for the field.
If the Pac-12 sold some late night game kicks off at like 8:30,
right?
That game might go past midnight, right. And technically in their lease agreement, they have to be done at midnight. UNLV has zero control of that stadium.
Right.
They're allowed to play there. That's it. And so if that's a problem for the Pac-12, that's not changing. And I think if the Raiders sat back and it was like, hey, as a community, let's not let the Pac-12 in until they allow UNLV to play. If the Raiders got an offer from the Pac-12 where the Raiders thought we're going to make money on a Pac-12 football game, They're hosting it. They don't care about UNLV. They're saying, welcome in, Pac-12. Welcome back to Allegiant Stadium. Yeah, who cares about UNLV football?
If UNLV has a game in the third overtime and it's 12:01, is Mark Davis turning the lights off?
Technically, by the lease agreement, I don't know what would happen, but they have to be done by midnight. I don't think they would. I think they would let them finish the game. But technically, they do. Just play Nebraska in overtime, and it'll be over quick.
That's true.
It'll be done in a hurry.
Get Nebraska here, yeah, and then get to overtime, and they'll be on their own, the other side of the field, yeah, their own side of the field on 3rd and 25.
Yeah, it'll be done in a hurry. The one point that Adam made that I do think is the best point in that story is UNLV has kind of been sold out by its own city, where we allow the Pac-12, the Big 12, the SEC, the Big 10, we allow all of these conferences access to Las Vegas, and UNLV has nothing to do with it. UNLV gets left out. So if you are these other conferences, there you never have to say, well, we need to add UNLV to get the Las Vegas market. No.
No, I mean, the Big 12 had their preseason media day here, and Brett Yarmuk, I talked to him afterwards, and he said, oh, this is great. We've always wanted to be here.
Right.
Now we're here.
Yeah.
And didn't mention UNLV.
Right. And it's not, listen, it's not that it's the fault of anybody, because again, the Big 12 or the SEC or the Big 10 wants to put something here, and you think, whether you're Allegiant Stadium or T-Mobile Arena or whoever, you're going to make money on it. Yeah, of course, accept it. But by doing that over and over and over, Las Vegas is this exploding sports market, and UNLV doesn't have a place right now, because you don't have to have UNLV to be a part of this sports market. You can put your events. We're going to say yes to your event. We'll probably give you hundreds of millions of dollars of public money if you ask for that too. We're going to say yes to your event, whether or not UNLV is involved. So UNLV's kind of been sold out by its own city at the end of the
day. Is this more numbers crunching from Jeremy Aguero?
Oh, where's Jeremy Aguero?
Is he numbers crunching at this moment?
He might be.
See when the Big 12 gets to come here?
Can he calculate the negative impact this has had on UNLV? Like, if they get left out of the Pac-12, can Jeremy Aguero tell us how bad this is for UNLV at the end of the day? They have lost out on hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue because they have been excluded from any legitimate conference, and now they're going to Montana for conference games every year. Yeah, we'll await that report from Jeremy Aguero.
From Jeremy Aguero.
All right, coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, we're going to get into some Major League Baseball. Joining us now from The Score is Brian McWilliam. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for joining
us. Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Thanks for having me on.
All right. How the hell are the Tigers a playoff team? What has happened these last 2 or 3 weeks for Detroit to find themselves in position to go to the playoffs with 6 games left?
Yeah, they're a big surprise. They got hot at the right time. They're playing some of the best baseball in the second half, I'd say, outside of the Padres. And it's just a young team. They're really exciting. It was surprising because they traded a lot of their veteran guys at the deadline, including Jack Flaherty. But they've had people step up, really good bullpen, and Kerry Carpenter has been raking. They've got Parker Meadows in center field, like, robbing home runs, I feel like, every game. And Riley Green's a future star for them.
So who do you think misses in the AL wildcard race? You've got Kansas City and Detroit in right now. Minnesota's on the outside looking in. Who misses out of those three?
The Royals are playing pretty poor baseball right now. They've lost 7 in a row. They're an exciting team, and it would be really exciting to see them get into the playoffs because they had Bobby Witt Jr., and they're coming off a 106-loss season. So it'd be exciting to see that turnaround, but right now they're playing probably the worst out of any of the teams in the race, so I'm going to say the Royals.
Is this the year, because you mentioned them before, and obviously they've got a lot of talent, is this year the Padres get over the hump and can win this thing?
Honestly, I do. They are the hottest team in baseball right now. They are electric. They are in a great position. Like, they've chased down the Dodgers. They have a big series coming up starting tomorrow. They're going into L.A., but they own that season series. They seem to own the Dodgers. They're playing with a lot of confidence. Their pitching is solid. Their bullpen is elite. And they've got the talent to really do some damage in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think they can really get over the hump this year.
Maybe you can yell that the Phillies are the right answer for this, but are the Padres the most complete team in Major League Baseball?
Right now, I do still think that the Phillies are the most complete team. I know that their bullpen isn't as elite as San Diego's, but there's just so much experience on that team, especially from an offensive perspective. And when you go deep into the playoffs, you need some anchors atop your pitching staff. And the Phillies have shown with Wheeler and Nola that they can do that. They've gotten to the World Series. Like, I know last year was a bump in the road. It was a big surprise losing to the Diamondbacks. But they seem to have what it takes to get to the World Series and win it. San Diego, like I said, they're hot. They have an electric team. They are complete, but they don't have that same postseason experience. I know, like, they did go deep a couple years ago, but the Phillies, I think, are the most complete team in the NL.
Do the Dodgers have enough starting pitchers to win in the playoffs?
No, I don't. I do not think so. They have Flaherty right now, healthy. They have Flaherty. They have Yoshi. They have Landon Knack. Walker Buehler struggling. Like, he's coming out. He's having a bad year. That's just not enough. Kershaw is still, you know, dealing with his foot thing. Like, he did throw a side session on Friday, I believe, and you know he's not there yet. And as we've seen and as we saw last year, he actually hasn't been pitching very well in the postseason. So they don't have a lot, but I do think they have enough offense to carry them pretty deep. But when it comes to the postseason, we all know that pitching is a big thing. Maybe they'll do a lot of bullpen games. They have a strong bullpen, but you got a long way to go to win a World Series, and you need arms. And they've only got like 3 or 4 healthy starters right now, so it's going to be a rough ride.
I'm curious, in the American League, how many American League playoff teams do you think have a good postseason starting rotation?
So, surprisingly, I do think the Astros, I know a lot of the talk this year is about the rotation and how decimated it is by injuries, but I do think they actually have a good enough rotation to go deep, because Framber Valdez is, as he's shown, is one of the best starters in baseball. The guy's almost throwing a no-hitter every time out. Hunter Brown, he can pitch as a starter, he can pitch as a reliever, but I think he's having a good enough year to do well in the postseason. Ronel Blanco is underrated. He's been very, very good for them. And Justin Verlander is struggling, but he's a seasoned pitcher. He's one of the best pitchers of this era. I know he's 41, but he knows what it takes to do well in the postseason. You're talking about a guy that has gone to a World Series and won it. So I think they can go deep with that, what they have. The Guardians, we know they're everything's built around pitching there, and their bullpen is shut down. If you get into the fifth inning against the Guardians, get in the fifth inning with a lead, you're in trouble. And then the Yankees right now are in a situation where they have 6 guys that could potentially start a game in the postseason, which is a good problem to have. So those 3 teams, I think, could go deep with their pitching staffs.
Interested in the Yankees, if they have that kind of depth, what would hold them back from winning it? What would be the thing that would hold them back from winning it all?
Injuries. You never know. It's just classic Yankees. You never know when someone's going to get hurt. Aaron Judge could crash through another fence. Juan Soto could slide into another wall. These guys have bodies that, like, this year has been great for them. They've been fairly healthy. But you never know when something can happen with them, and it just seems like a stroke of bad luck. So injuries. Also, like, Gerrit Cole is a Cy Young winner. Again, one of the best pitchers we've ever seen, but he's not having the best year of his career. I feel like he is starting to show signs of, like, who he is as the season's winding down, which is a good thing because we're going into the postseason and you want him to kind of be at his peak. But after Gerrit Cole, like, Carlos Rodon, he's kind of inconsistent. You know, Nestor Cortez, he's up and down. So injuries and then, like, an up and down pitching staff. But if they're all pitching to their capabilities, they can go deep. If it's the flip and they're all pitching, you know, like we've seen some of the inconsistencies throughout the season, then they could be an early exit, which would be unfortunate considering, you know, they have Aaron Judge and they only have Juan Soto for this season, unless he re-signs in free agency.
Is the Yankees' biggest rival right now outfield walls?
It's starting to seem like it. Yeah. It was just so coincidental with Soto sliding into that wall and hurting himself. He seems to be okay, but it was just so reminiscent of Judge going through that fence last year. And that was actually the season-changing moment for the Yankees because he made that incredible play, went through that fence. It was all like highlight reels everywhere. Like, wow, that was spectacular. But that was what put him down for the year, and that's why the Yankees didn't make the playoffs last year.
Shohei Ohtani has been an excellent pitcher when he's healthy. He's been an excellent hitter. This year he decided to steal bases, and obviously he's good at that. If he played in left field, would he win a gold glove?
You know what? He doesn't play left field enough, but I wouldn't be surprised because every time Shohei Ohtani is given a challenge, he like exceeds expectations. You know, since he was like a young boy, he mapped out what he was going to do. He knew he was going to be an elite hitter. He knew he was going to be an elite pitcher. Now he's elite at stealing bases. You know, he became a leadoff hitter this year when Mookie Betts went down. He can do anything, it seems like. He's a unicorn. So I wouldn't be surprised, but he would need to get some reps in.
Well, he is Brian McWilliam from The Score. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Brian.
It.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You too.
So there's Brian McWilliam on some Major League Baseball. Ohtani should play in the field and stop being a bum. I don't know what we're doing here. Just put him out there. Right? Why not?
Can he make the throw home?
I mean, right now, probably not, because his UCL is still recovering.
Right.
But next year, why not?
When he's not pitching?
Yeah, why not? Just leave him in the field. He pitches, he comes out in the sixth, and you put him out in left field.
Trade him out?
Yeah, it'll be like Little League. He runs out there into left field. Why not? He'd be good, wouldn't he? Is there anything?
He's good. Is there anything he's bad at?
Is there any reason that you don't think Ohtani could be an above average defensive outfielder?
No.
Right.
Because he's good at everything.
Right. Put him in left field. Let's go, Dodgers.
I'd rather have him than Taylor.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Always complaining about somebody.
He's right about the pitching, though. He is. He's right about the pitching.
Yeah,
he's right about the pitching. And I don't think the offense, you know, their offense is good, but they'll score 12 one night and two the next. And I just think when you get in the playoffs and the bullpens and everything that really matters, they're just not going to make the run. Their pitching is just not good enough. I mean, I watched Buehler the other day. He has not been the same since he's come back. Flaherty's been okay. Landon Knack. Counting on this guy.
The biggest problem for the whole, like, carried by the offense thing is we do see it every now and then where teams make deep runs and, like, the offense is lighting it up. But for the most part, when you get in the playoffs, you're facing a much higher quality of pitcher than you do on average in the regular season.
Right.
Because teams are only throwing their top three or four starters. They're going to the bullpen quicker, and generally speaking, relievers are more effective than starters because they're throwing that one inning at a time. That's why bullpen games and why starters get pulled so early. But generally speaking, you're going to face a much higher quality of pitching in the postseason, which means your heavy offense becomes much, much worse.
Yeah.
And if Landon Knack can't get out of third without giving up five runs, you might not make that up even with the best offense. So
Lance Lynn.
Yeah.
Last year.
You should have traded for him again.
I need that guy.
Yeah. You might. Who's starting for you in the playoffs? You're going to be begging for
Lance Lynn.
You're going to be begging for Lance Lynn to come get some outs for you. Also, the Tigers, their playoff odds are now up to 70% by Fangraphs. It was like 8% 2 weeks ago. They can't lose, and the Royals and the Twins have both decided to just, well, let's just lose every game we play. And, yeah, now the Tigers have a chance to actually make the postseason, well, which is insane. They're ahead of the Twins.
By a game.
Yeah. The Royals and Tigers are both tied for both the second and third wildcard spots. And then Minnesota's a game behind them.
Seattle's two games behind them.
So if Seattle can finish strong, they have a chance. I don't think they will because they got to pass two teams. But they have a chance if they can finish out here strong. But Danny's shaking his head no over there. Danny, the Astros only have to win one of these three games against Seattle to win the AL West.
I'm fine with that. Astros won the West. It's fine. But I also have Mariners to not make the playoffs.
Yeah, I know. They're not. They're fine. They're not going to be good.
You say they only have to jump one team, or they only have to catch two teams. They only need to catch one because Minnesota's just going to drop out.
They're not going to drop.
They don't really matter.
Out. How are they dropping out?
They don't really matter. They're just going to drop.
Matter.
And then they just have to do a little bit better than Kansas City, who's also trying to get out of the playoffs. We're going to find out a couple of their players are going to be at casinos too at 6 a.m.
Oh, that'd be fun.
And then Mariners are going to sneak in and be like, hey, we're here.
Here's my prediction for the final week. Detroit still misses the playoffs.
And Mariners get in?
No, Mariners are done for.
Minnesota turns it around?
Kansas City and Minnesota?
It's the same teams we'd been talking about for 2 months. Minnesota, KC get in.
So
what
makes you think that two teams that are kind of a disaster right now are going to turn things around with 5 days left?
7 days left. It's baseball. What do you mean? This happens all of the time. Teams don't just stay hot until the end of the season. Teams go with, we won five in a row and then we lost 7 of 10. How'd we do that? Yeah, it's baseball. It happens. So, yeah, I do not think the Tigers are better than the Royals and the Twins. With seven or six games to go, I think that'll hold true.
All right, hopefully.
Coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, we'll get back into the NFL.
Fourth down and a yard to go. Long count. They give it off. Bashaun Robinson hit in the backfield. He goes down. Kansas City holds on downs again. Nick Bolton scrapes to the outside and makes the hit.
Now back to the press box on ESPN Las Vegas.
I'm gonna ask a question that's something I should have learned my lesson last year. But
can a bad 3-0 team?
Kansas City's 3-0. They've won games by 7-1-5.
Are they a bad 3-0 team?
Baltimore had a game tying, although they would have gone for two to try to win it, touchdown that did not count because Isaiah Likely's big toe was out of bounds. They had a walk-off 50-plus yard field goal to beat Cincinnati by one, and Atlanta turned it over on downs inside the red zone twice in the final 4 minutes of a game that they won, that the Chiefs won by five. The Falcons are, or excuse me, the Chiefs are legitimately three plays away from being 0-3. Likely's foot's in bounds. They lose on a 2-point conversion. Butker misses a 50-plus yard field goal. And Atlanta just scores a touchdown on one of those fourth down plays instead of getting stuffed on both on the second one there. I know better than this, but
you did this last year.
But they're not, you can't win every game by 2 points.
Right.
I know it's Mahomes, and I know they keep doing it, but you can't.
Maybe they can.
You can't do that. You got to, like, a good team's got to.
But it's going to even out?
Normally, but it hasn't for the Chiefs. Like, I think that's sort of the key here, is that maybe Mahomes actually is just so good that it just never evens out. You just always win the close game late because you're Mahomes. But again, the funny thing to me is, like, these wins haven't been about Mahomes. The defense stopped the Falcons twice.
Right.
Mahomes got the ball back with a chance to get a first down in the game last night. Didn't do it. They gave the ball right back to Atlanta, who then drove down the field, but then got stuffed in the red zone. But the defense made two plays. It was just Isaiah Likely's toe. That's what saved them against Baltimore. They played for a 50-plus yard field goal against Cincinnati.
Yes, and they got the pass interference call, which I think was pass interference.
It was. But like they handed the ball off, I think, two plays in a row prior to that 50-plus yard field goal against Baltimore. Or, excuse me, Cincinnati. They did not like try to go get a touchdown and win that game.
Or get closer than 50-some odd yards.
So it's not – like that's the thing to me. These three games haven't been because, oh, Mahomes has had a great final drive.
Right.
It's been a defensive play or a – I don't know.
Or a big toe.
So it makes me think, like, they're not that good. They're 3-0, but they're not that good. The good news is nobody's good in the NFL right now, except Sam Darnold.
Well, no one's good in their division.
And the Steelers' defense. Those are the two good things in the NFL right now.
Yeah,
so,
Andy Dalton's pretty good.
Oh, I keep forgetting about Andy Dalton. He's obviously the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yes.
But that's the good news, is they're 3-0 and nobody else is actually any good in the NFL. Any other team, it's not the Chiefs and it's not Patrick Mahomes, and you had those three wins, you'd be like, all right, this is a little
fluky. Well, people would say they're getting lucky.
Yeah, it's a little fluky.
Right.
You'd be like, all right, yeah, they're 3-0, but...
But it's because it's him and it's because it's them.
Yeah. So, it's the Chiefs, and I know better than this, so I never said anything I just said, Danny. You don't get to pull any of that. I never questioned them. It's never happened before.
Sure.
Yeah, never happened. Meanwhile, Bo Nix and the Broncos won a game.
Captain Bo Nix.
Why is he Captain Bo Nix?
I don't know, because he's starting quarterback. It's required that they're all captains.
Denver beat Tampa yesterday 26-7. Now, before we get to Bo Nix, Denver sacked Baker Mayfield 7 times, and Baker only had 163 yards passing. What the hell? Is Denver's defense, like, good now?
Well, we're going to see in 2 weeks against the...
No, we're not.
Raiders.
This offense is terrible. We're not going to find anything
Raiders
out.
Offense, yeah.
We're not going to find anything out. Of course they're going to look good in that. It's the Raiders offense. But last year, Denver's defense was bad. And I know the second half of the season, they were better than the first half. But the first half, they were one of the worst defenses like in the history of the league. Are they actually a competent defense now? I mean, yesterday they were awesome. You sack a guy. You sack
seven
anybody
times.
7 times. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
Defense might be pretty good.
What do you think of Bo Nix?
It's the same Bo Nix game that we've seen. He threw 36 times for 216 yards. Like, that's nothing special. I guess he didn't have a turnover.
Right.
So that's good. But that's probably like the Bo Nix ceiling. I know he didn't throw for a touchdown. He'll throw for one eventually, in theory. But That's like the best Bo Nix game. Is he completes like 68% of his passes,
mistakes.
Throws for over 200 yards on like 30 something
attempts.
Doesn't
make mistakes.
There's no Will Levis backhanded pick six.
Right.
And you hope the defense is good. And if it's good, then you have a chance to win the game. I did want to get to this story though, that was from before the games were played yesterday. So the Steelers beat the Broncos in week two, and Jesse Palmer, an NFL reporter, Jesse Palmer, he said, I'm talking to the Steelers corners and they're sitting there laughing, saying, we knew the playbook was this big. We know they weren't going to take any shots, and we know what he likes to do. They're going to make it easy on him to go here and here. That's all we had to worry about. So the Steelers corners were laughing at how small the playbook was for Bo Nix in week two.
Funny.
It's great. It's unfortunate that they didn't turn around and won.
They won 13-6.
Because I can't, well, I can't, I mean that the Broncos turned around and won this week because I can't pile on here. But it's pretty funny to be like, yeah, we knew they had seven plays in their playbook.
They held them to 6 points, so they knew something.
Yeah. Ah, the Broncos. Ah, Bo Nix, what a terrible quarterback.
Yeah, we'll see in 2 weeks.
I got to say one thing. I'm disappointed. We're 3 weeks in. I can't call Bo Nix the worst quarterback in the NFL.
No. No.
Bryce Young exists, although he got benched.
Will Levis.
And Will Levis is still a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Will Levis is still a starting quarterback in this league. And he's throwing backward pick sixes.
So I will give Bo Nix at least a little bit of credit that he's not number 32. Maybe he's like 28 or something like that. He's still not good. I'm sorry, Ryan. Calm down with your Oregon love over there. Bo Nix is still a bum who can't run more than seven plays. But they got seven sacks on Baker Mayfield, so they're in good shape. Broncos better than the Raiders?
Oh, what a question. After seeing yesterday, everyone is. After watching that. It's a disaster.